Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. Let's get straight to the docket. First, we have another hearing set in the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter. We'll talk about it. Second, did the prosecution mislead the court in the Michelle Traconis matter? Third, a guilty plea in California. Fourth, a case of a pig gets fat, a hog gets slaughtered. Fifth, don't lie. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of our contestants throughout the week vying for the title of dumb criminal contestant of the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thank you for watching. Now, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe and also hit that little bell so you make sure you receive notifications. And if you haven't done that in a while, hit it again, because we've had a lot of people saying they aren't getting notifications when it comes to YouTube, so try again. Let's get straight to the docket. All right, we have another hearing set in the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter. Now, as you may recall, there's a hearing set a little farther out regarding the motion to dismiss and change of venue. We talked about that yesterday, so if you missed it, you could watch that video as well. Well, now there's a hearing set, and it's only a couple weeks away. It's now set for February 17th at 9:30 a.m., obviously of 2021, and it's regarding the motion to compel. Now, as you may recall, this was alluded to somewhat at the motions hearing regarding the motion to disqualify the special prosecutor, Mr. Wood. And the court at one point blank asked Mr. Means, have you filed a motion to compel? Basically saying that there may be other statements out there that haven't been turned over by the prosecutor. And in the motion for specific discovery, this was filed back on December 17th of 2020. And really what it's asking for is everything that should have been turned over already. Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell, through their counsel, ask for a list of all persons, witnesses, potential witnesses, persons of knowledge or the like that you, the special prosecuting attorney, Mr. Robert Wood, have spoken, conversed with regard to this case. And then they want all the information, and then they say, hey, here's a list of people that you should let us have all this information about. Well, first one, Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell. Of course they have to turn over any statements that may be in their possession as it relates to that. Alex Cox, Zulima Pastinatus, all DeBell children, Tammy DeBell, Adams Cox, and the children of Adam Cox, Colby Ryan, Kelsey Ryan, parents of Chad DeBell, parents of Tammy DeBell, parents of Lori Vallow DeBell, and the list goes on. There are some 27 requests that have been made. Let me tell you, there's a rule, and it's called Rule 16, and it relates to discovery. And under the criminal rules, discovery is self-executing, and the prosecutor has a duty to turn over any information, not only that's in their possession, but may come into their possession. So they have to constantly be supplementing any Rule 16 disclosures. Now, the prosecutor is not going to withhold any information regarding these witness statements. They more than likely have been recorded, or there's been a results of interview, which would have been a summary typed up by the detective. Clearly, what Mr. Means and Mr. Pryor are looking for is something as it related to the whole incident that they charged that Mr. Wood was doing something unethical. And we all know how that turned out. Those little introductory comments is not something that is discoverable. If one of the witnesses says something and it's exculpatory, then a report should be made. But otherwise, they don't have to turn it over. Could you imagine having to write a report of everything that you do every day? Oh yeah, I do that. It's called my daily posting. I keep track of what I do every 6 minutes of the day. But we're not gonna have prosecutors, police officers do that, all right? Now, what's the ramifications if something like that happened? Well, I don't think it did. First of all, if you look at the discovery disclosure that was filed January 14th, basically, Mr. Wood, in his response, says, "We've turned everything over to you." And in fact, they go to one more extreme, so to speak, and instead of just saying, "We've turned it over to you," they list them all in Addendum A, which we don't have access to, but it's any reports of examination and tests, state witnesses, expert witnesses, police reports. They list them all. Basically, you have what we have, but guess what? I'll give it to you again, just so we're absolutely clear. Now, if Mr. Wood had not turned something over and something was stated at trial that should have been turned over, guess what? That witness's testimony could be stricken, a mistrial could be declared, or there could be some other sanction as it relates to the district attorney if he failed to do that. From what I can tell from Mr. Wood, he does not seem like the guy that's going to withhold evidence. He's going to be like my old boss. My first boss is a prosecutor, and he says, "You know what? I'm going to give the defense everything they want, and we're still going to convict the defendant." Playing hide the ball is something that amateurs and low-level skilled prosecutors do. Experienced, quality prosecutors go with the mentality of, "I'll give you anything you want." Here, Mr. Wood's saying, "Not only have I given it to you, I'll give it to you again." So when they have this hearing next week, it'll be interesting to see what Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell's argument is, what they think hasn't been turned over. Once again, I'm a little surprised by the methods being used here. Frankly, I think this is more of a situation where Mr. Means is more familiar with the civil world, where you have to turn everything over. Guess what? In the criminal world, you go out with your investigator and you go and you knock on doors and ask any of these people, "Will you please talk with us?" And guess what? You don't have to turn it over to the prosecution. That's the beautiful thing about it. Go talk to them. If you think something's being withheld, why do you want them to go back out and re-interview these witnesses? And so they say it twice. So then you have a prior consistent statement that you can introduce if the defense tries to say that it was recently made up and fabricated to somehow be prejudicial to the defense. Bottom line, I don't get it. Go out, do your investigation. Never, ever rely on the prosecution. And you have to live by a simple assumption if you're a defense counsel, which is assume nothing. I don't care what they say on the paper. You go talk with them. That's what you do. We'll obviously have that hearing. Hopefully you'll join us and we can watch it together. Next on the docket, did the prosecutors mislead the court in the Michelle Traconis matter? Well, that's what the defense is alleging. The defense has filed a motion claiming that the state withheld exculpatory evidence. Exculpatory evidence is evidence that would reduce the culpability of the defendant. And the defense is demanding that the charges be dropped against Michelle Traconis. They're also alleging in their motion that the charges are based on false allegations in the affidavit. Now, specifically, what the defense is alleging is that in the affidavit, when a police officer asks for an affidavit for an arrest warrant, and they go to the judge and say, "Here's why we believe there's probable cause," the prosecutor, the detective, have to state, "Here's the good, here's the bad," for the prosecution, because the judge has to be informed to see if there's actually probable cause. If you only say, "Hey, here's all the reasons why we think there's probable cause," but you don't list any of the exculpatory information, there could be an issue regarding the validity of the warrant. And everything thereafter, if it was found that there was misinformation in there, guess what? It all goes away. You can't use it, and more than likely, the case would crumble. Now, what the defense is alleging is that in the affidavit, there were misstatements regarding Ms. Traconis. Specifically, the defense argues that the affiant, in this case, misled a judge in writing that Fotos Doulos drove a black Ford Raptor, stopping at over 30 locations along more than a 4-mile stretch. This was apparently meant to mislead the judge into thinking that Dulos discarded evidence at 30 location, but video reviewed by authorities only showed him making 3 stops. Also, the defense said that the affiant in the affidavit for the arrest warrant omitted the fact that the video only showed the male occupant of the vehicle stepping out, never the woman. The defense has maintained that the affiant was being misled by saying Traconis refused to cooperate, even though a detective noted that she consulted with her attorney at the time. In the motion, the defense further alleges that the affiant used these narratives to get an arrest warrant for the alleged crime of tampering with or fabricating physical evidence and hindering the prosecution in the first degree. The defense has maintained that the chief state's attorney, knowing that probable cause did not exist for the warrant and without a good faith reason, then filed the documents which switched the charges to hindering prosecution in the second degree, conspiracy to commit tampering with physical evidence, and tampering with physical evidence. The defense alleges that this evidence has been seized based upon an unconstitutionally obtained warrant, and that all of that evidence is a fruit of an unlawful search and seizure, and therefore the evidence should be suppressed. The motion also continues, stating that Ms. Traconis' defense team has not been provided information regarding the other co-defendant. That's right, Mr. Mwahini. Do you remember? He was the friend and attorney of Photos Dulos, and he was arrested. Apparently, he gave a proffer, and they were able to provide a nice photo. This is what a proffer looks like. You have the defendant sitting there. You have the defendant sitting there with his attorneys. You have the prosecutor and all the detectives handling the case, and you are there to tell the truth. And under a proffer, anything that you say cannot be used against you. Assume you're in fact telling the truth. So if negotiations break down, they normally cannot use that against you. So the defense for Ms. Traconis is saying that Mwahini is expected to receive some benefit. And apparently after he gave this proffer, that he was miraculously given a bond in an amount requested by his attorney, and he has been released from custody. How convenient. Clearly, in the photo that we have here, there's a camera that's recording the conversation. So I can't imagine what the defense is saying has not been turned over. If there's been no deal reached just as of yet, there's nothing to turn over just yet. We'll continue to follow the Traconis case. Obviously, it gets a little interesting. It would have been a little more interesting if Photos Dulos was still around, but it's still going to get good, in my humble opinion. Next on the docket, a man pleads guilty. Specifically, Derek Almeida pled guilty to 36 counts of involuntary manslaughter in exchange for a 12-year sentence. Now, he's already free on bail, and he likely will not return to jail because of the nearly 3 years that he'd already spent behind bars. And if you calculate kind of good time credit, he won't serve any additional time. The court read each count with the name of the victims. And when she asked Almeida his plea for each charge, he responded guilty. But his quiet responses were sometimes inaudible, apparently, through an online stream of the hearing held virtually, obviously because of the coronavirus. Sentencing is scheduled for March 8th, when the court will determine whether he will pay restitution, continue to be monitored electronically at his home in Northern California, and to be subject to supervised probation. The families of the 36 people will be allowed to give a victim impact statement at the time. Prosecutors say Almeida was criminally negligent when he illegally converted the industrial Oakland warehouse into a residence and event space for artists dubbed the Ghost Ship. Stuffing the second-story building with flammable materials and extension cords, there were apparently no smoke detectors or sprinkler systems in place. And back on December 2nd, 2016, a fire broke out at the warehouse during an electronic music dance party, and it was moving so quickly that the victims were trapped on the illegally constructed second floor. Prosecutor says the victims received no warning and had little chance to escape down a narrow staircase. Now, the first trial resulted in a mistrial, and another co-defendant, who simply collected the rents, was found not guilty. Clearly, this is a case where the prosecutors believe they had trouble, obviously proving the case beyond a reasonable doubt, hence the mistrial. But this is a compromise where everyone gets something except the victims. The victims want justice. They want Almena to go to jail for much longer than basically credit time served. The prosecutors get a conviction. Mr. Almena gets to get on with his life. As they say, sometimes if it's a good deal, both sides go away unhappy. Obviously, Mr. Almena would prefer not to be a convicted felon. Certainly, the prosecution would have rather have had some prison time in addition to a felony conviction. So sometimes you can't always get what you want. Next on the docket, a case of a pig gets fat and a hog gets slaughtered. Listen to this. A teenager in Georgia is under arrest because he stole nearly $1 million from a grocery store where he worked. Trey Brown, 19, was taken into custody after scamming the Kroger store of almost $980,000. Get this, over a two-week period. According to the police, Brown created more than 40 returns for non-existent items back in December and January. Those returns, which rang in price from $75 all the way up to $87,000, and those returns were then placed on several credit cards. Can't imagine what you could buy at a Kroger for $87,000, but needless to say, it worked. Brown then trying, obviously, to lay low, not really. He went out and bought cars, clothes, guns, and lots of shoes. And he apparently totaled one of his cars that he bought, a Camaro, while out enjoying the fruits of his theft. Apparently, it didn't take long for Kroger to notice the fraudulent transactions. I mean, it's only $1 million. How could you possibly notice that, right? The police believe that Brown worked at the fuel center, stole the money while an employee tasked with flagging fraudulent transactions was on vacation for 2 weeks. Needless to say, even though some of the money was taken, it's still a theft. He has been released based upon him posting a bond of $11,200. Hopefully the prosecutor asked that $11,200 bond come from clean sources of money, not any money that he may have stolen. Now, certainly we're not going to say Mr. Brown should steal money. I'm a firm believer, don't steal other people's money. But the reality of it is, had he done just a few transactions, he probably would have got away with it. But you take $980,000, guess what? People are going to notice that. Mr. Brown, you're lucky you're not in a dumb criminal contestant category, but you're really, really close. Next on the docket, do you remember the story that we brought you last year regarding a New Jersey woman who had admitted to scamming more than $400,000 from a GoFundMe page because of a nice story about a homeless man? Caitlin McClure, who spent the money on fancy cars and trips to casinos, could face up to 4 years in prison after pleading guilty to conspiracy to commit wire fraud. She and her co-defendants falsely told strangers on the fundraising website that Marine veteran Johnny Bobbitt had used his last $20 to buy her gas after she was stranded on the way home from Philadelphia in 2017. Bobbitt, who joined McClure and her then-boyfriend Mark D'Amico in recounting the fake story to newspapers and morning talk shows, has also pled guilty and is awaiting sentencing. D'Amico is still fighting the federal charges. The initial goal of the page was to raise about $10,000. Obviously, with that story, it got out and got up to about $400,000. Bogus feel-good tale fell apart after Bobbitt sued the former couple for keeping the money from him. And then authorities soon learned that the so-called Good Samaritan had actually met McClure and D'Amico near a casino in October of 2017. Bobbitt had in fact deposited about $75,000 of the money, while the former couple quickly used the rest of it for gambling, vacations, a BMW, and an RV, including a couple of expensive handbags as well. I've always said that in theft cases, it's easy to spend other people's money, and it's amazing how quickly it goes by and you realize you have really nothing left to show for it. Needless to say, Ms. McClure and her co-defendants are more than likely going to prison. Rule of the day, don't lie. It will catch up to you. Now, let's say you want to find out if somebody is lying to you. What is the best way to do it? Well, obviously the best way is to simply ask them. If that doesn't work, do a criminal background search on somebody. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did when you do this. I'm telling you, you sign up, you are able to anonymously search anyone here in the United States, and literally millions of public records are searched while you wait. A report is generated, and that report is going to have information regarding social media, telephone numbers, email addresses, all associated with the person you're searching. You're going to get information regarding criminal history, property records, bankruptcies, civil judgments, divorce records, right? All those things that you want to know about when you are beginning to start a relationship with somebody. How many stories have we talked about over the years where somebody met someone on an internet site and two people go on a date and only one goes home? That's right, because the other one usually winds up deceased somewhere. Do yourself a favor, check the person out before it's too late. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Now, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we do that, let's get to a quick recap of our dumb criminal contestants from the week. First, we have Escabel Robles. Remember, he's the man from North Dakota who was arrested for drug possession, and his booking photo had that nice shirt that said, "Don't do drugs." Then we had Miss Discarado, who was guilty of not wearing a mask, but guilty of not leaving when she was asked to do so. That's called trespass. We also may recall Miss DiCarado should have had the fashion police called on her, because I'm not sure that leopard skin really went with the theme that she was going for that day. We also had Curtis McCoy, that's right, the one testicle DV case, when he became so incensed when his partner reminded him he only has one testicle. Then we had Shane Gillis the other day that threatened his former boss while the police were on the line and he was coming over with a twisted tea can. Oh, and a pipe as well. And now our Friday dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Kimberly Johnson. Miss Johnson apparently was going out on a date, perhaps we could call it, with her friend at the Jerry's Nugget restaurant. Well, it turned out that when the friend was going to pay for the meal, he realized he'd only brought $5 in his pocket. Apparently, the two began arguing, and Johnson made the friend walk the 2.5 miles to his North Las Vegas apartment. About 20 minutes after he got home, Miss Johnson arrived, and the man heard a splashing sound on the window and front door. He opened the door just as Johnson allegedly sparked a fire, and the man reportedly slammed the burning door shut. And then Johnson allegedly used a hammer to break the front window of the apartment and threw her flaming purse into the apartment. Johnson is facing charges of, get this, attempted murder and arson. I know, it's a whole new age, it's a whole new era of bond schedules. But guess what? For the charges of arson in the first degree, which could have resulted in lots of human life, i.e., because it's an apartment building, and the charge of attempted first-degree murder, her bond is set at a whopping $5,000. Wow. Not sure what's going in Las Vegas, but apparently it is a kinder, gentler place, no doubt. But Miss Johnson, I get it. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I think the guy should always pay. You should always bring your wallet. Make sure you have backup. But when maybe you have to go Dutch because maybe the guy left his wallet there, I understand you could be upset. Maybe you don't go out again. But to go home to his house and try to burn it down, I think that's a little over the top. Miss Johnson, let it go. And for that, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, please vote. Let us know who you think should be the winner for the dumb criminal contestant of the week. And that's right, the winner will receive Crime Talk merchandise. And if Miss Johnson wins, you know, she's out on a $5,000 bond, we will be able to find her and track her down. Thank you so much for watching this week. We appreciate you taking the time to do so. Please watch our weekly recap on Saturday if you were unable to catch all of the shows this week. And we will see you next time on Crime Talk. Have a wonderful day.